Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. We're talking now to Melissa Newman, and she is an English Setter breeder who also 22 years ago had a dual champion, amateur field champion English Setter. Haji was also a best in show dog, right?
Correct.
So that extra awesomeness. And is he still the only one, best in show dual?
Yes.
And I just love that. I think that is amazing. So tell us a little bit about how you started in English Setters.
So I started hunting dogs as a kid, and I hunted with my dad behind all kinds of pointing dogs and labs and field dogs, basically all breeds. And I wanted a beautiful dog that would hunt and would win the breed at Westminster. That was my goal as an eight-year-old kid. So I started professionally boarding dogs at eight, started saving my money at 12, bought my first Irish Setter, and he was out of a litter of 19 pet quality Irish Setters. Of course, I didn't know I was 12. And he was about as gun-shy as they come. And so by the time I was 17, I started really researching what I wanted to do. And I bought a beautiful Irish Setter, made him the top dog in the Northwest. But he was also gun-shy. So I decided that I'd switch to English Setters. And it's all history from there about 36 years ago. And I was fortunate enough to buy a dog sight unseen, which was Haji's father, and then Lisa Bitch to breed to him, who produced Haji. So to this day, Haji's still the number one English Setter sire of all time. He's produced around 135 American champions, 16 all-breed best in show dogs out of, I think, 11 different bitches. And he is the only dual that's a best in show or best in specialty or high-end trial dog. He's also
a I didn't know he was a high-end trial dog.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
He's done it all. So also his son finished his dual after Haji. So we had the 12th dual English Setter. Haji was the 8th and his son Zion was the 12th and was the last one up until just recently. So he held that spot for years, like 15 years. He held that spot of the 12th. Since then we did finish Sahara, who was a best in specialty group winner at Yukonuba, bred by, and also best opposite of the national, and she finished her amateur field championship. So she was an amazing dog, and so that was quite a few years ago as well. So that's kind of how our start, and the interesting part of the story, I suppose, is how we ended up running Haji in a field trial in the first place. So I showed up at a hunt test thinking I'll go check out Junior Hunter, you know, and because I've always hunted. And Haji was, I think he was almost 6 years old. And so he was in full show coat. He, you know, had won multiple best in shows. He won a first best at 13 months. And these guys, these older guys all came up to me and they go, "You should duel that dog." And I'm like, "Well, really? Are you sure? You know, are you sure?" And they're like, "Yeah, absolutely. You should duel this dog." So I soon after entered him in a trial in California, jumped on an airplane, went down, and he won a 4-point major at his first trial.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was amazing.
Wow.
And that year that I was campaigning him in the field, he won the national.
The national specialty show.
The national specialty show, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, he also won the best opposite 1 year at the national and won high-end trial at the same national 1 year as well. So he was just an all-around
dog. You know, some of those dogs, they're like this, like your first dog. Mm-hmm. And you're like, how did I get this lucky?
Yeah, amazing. Huh?
It is amazing. I mean, there, I know lots and lots of people that have been at it a long, long time that never get that, you know. Okay. So it's just, that is fabulous. I mean, it has been, I think Frank told me, 13 years. It's been a long time between Zion and now Tessa.
Yeah.
And so what types of things are different? What has changed? What was easier or harder or different then versus now?
Well, on the West Coast, which is where we trial up, I've trialed a little bit, mostly on the West Coast, so from California to Washington, back and forth. We have some of the very best Weimaraners, short hairs, Vislas, wire hairs, Brittany's in the United States. They are some of the best. And to compete against them, you're competing against the best of the best and some of the best trainers, some of the best US breeders, and it's just not easy. I mean, I honestly have never competed in the Far East, or so I don't know, you know, what it was like for people to compete back there, but out here, there's nothing easy about it.
No.
The hardest thing that we've had, our dogs are really honest and they're really broke and they hold really well, is the prejudice against the tail. So our dogs point with a, you know, 9-10 o'clock tail, and the judges think they're supposed to have a 12 o'clock tail because that's what the Llewellyn setters, English setters, Field English setters have. And those dogs, when they were imported from England, were bred to pointers who had been bred foxhounds. That's how they got the 12 o'clock tail. So our dogs don't have foxhound or pointer in our breeding, and so they have more of a level tail. The judges, it's unfortunate, don't take into account that some of the short hairs, some of the wire hairs, some of the Brittany, some of the Vieslas, and some of the Weimaraners all have docked tails, and some of them carry their tails level. So it shouldn't be such a prejudice as long as the dog had super intensity. As long as the dog is rigid and locked up and intense and solid, that shouldn't be a consideration, as long as the dog's tail is at least 9 o'clock or higher. I mean, it shouldn't be low. So we fight that a lot. And that's education on judges, and but it takes a long time.
And you guys judge hunt tests and trials,
both you and
your husband?
Yeah, we judge both, master hunter and field trials, all breed field trials.
And so you have an opportunity, again, Frank, the same thing, to see dogs, and did that help you in developing your dogs in the field?
I think it's what it trained me to be, was that my dog had to be trained better than any other dog out there because of the prejudices. They had to be rock solid. But the other problem I had is when I first started trialing, they were so solid that they weren't on the edge. And the judges like a dog that's on the edge where they're just about to break. They want that just incredible intensity where they're just like almost wired
quivering
for sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then I had to train my dogs to be completely on the edge where they were broke, but they were about to break.
Right.
I mean, then that sounds like an oxymoron, but that's what we call it in field trialing, where they're staying steady, but they're about to break. So we had to train them. I trained them to be that consistent and be that on edge, you know, and to where they're about to break. So, you know, it takes an incredible amount of time and effort and years of not training as much as it does trialing. It's over and over you enter these trials, and they're not cheap. It's an expensive sport, and to do it right, you've got to have horses, and and we live on an island. It's $100 round trip to get our horses off the island, and so it's a big deal, and we love it. I mean, my husband and I, that's where we met, and we love field trialing. We are, this fall, now that our son's graduated, going to go back to judging a lot more trials.
Oh, good.
So that's where our love is. So.
Yeah. Horses and dogs, man. I mean, how much better does it get?
Oh. Someone told me about field trialing, and I'm like, okay, I'll go try it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I died and went to heaven because I was raised on a horse. I'm
me
like,
too.
This is it.
I 100% agree with you.
I love it. So now we're both retired, and that's what we're going to do is ride horses and run dogs.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, so fun.
So, okay. Do you think the dogs in the show ring across the country have improved quality or not as much? How do you compare the 20 years ago to the Tessa that just finished? How do you compare that quality?
Are you talking about the...
In the show ring.
Are you talking about the standard of the English setter itself to the standard that they're supposed to look like? I think the quality's gone down.
Oh, okay.
I think that the movement that we had on our setters 20 years ago, and particularly the tail carriage, our dogs, in our standard, we're supposed to have a level tail, and it's gotten really bad. There's lots of gay tails, which is great for field trialing, but really bad for the show ring and for our standard. So they're really supposed to have level tails, and there's a lot of gay tails out there. So I think the breed overall has gone down quite a bit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And quality of dogs in the trials?
There's not hardly any English setters being trialed anymore. There's very, very few that are actually being trialed. So it's so difficult, and it takes so much time and effort and so much money to be able to do it, but there's very few people. Well, in the first place, there's very few people that did it in the first place.
Right.
There's only a handful of us that actually ever did it. So there's just not many.
You don't see it growing. That's what I would have
hoped. No, you don't see it growing at all.
I would have hoped to see that dual dog concept growing.
No. It would have grown, I think, if there hadn't been the prejudice on the tail, but that's something that you can't fight other than breaking the tail and standing it straight up, you know, so you just can't fight that prejudice, so it is what it is, you know, you have to just be better than they are, and it's hard to be if you can't change. You could change what the dog looks like, but you're going against your standard,
right.
I'm not going to do that. I want a dog that I can win best in show at Westminster with.
Right.
So.
Okay. And so encouragement to other people that might be trying to do this. What's your going forward? Someone sees what you did, sees what Frank did, and says, I want to take my English setter and do this. I would find out
where Frank trialed, and obviously those judges don't have as big of a prejudice, and they're more accepting, and I would go trial there, because different areas of the country are going to be much tougher than others, mm-hmm. and I have no idea how hard his is. I've never trialed there, so yeah. I'm not saying that his right. isn't hard. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying if he was successful there, I would go there and trial.
Find judges that can respect quality.
Right. Respect that the tail isn't everything, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And he, I thought it was interesting, started his dog in the field first and then went to the show ring, mm-hmm. which is kind of opposite of what I always tell people to do in my own breed. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that?
I absolutely think you should start a puppy on birds as early as possible, 6-8 weeks, and get them as birdy as possible and start working them in the field right away. That doesn't mean that you can't finish them in the show ring mm-hmm. first before you actually trial, but I would work them on birds as young and fast as possible mm-hmm. and work them and train them in the field right away, because you lose intensity and time and you lose drive often, and you just want to build that right away while they're young.
Right. And so did you see a difference with your dogs that you brought up this way versus Haji that you took at 6?
Yeah. Well, the only thing about trialing an older dog is Haji would always want to think for himself.
Right.
So he would say, you know, all the gunners, like in a hunt test, he's like, well, all the gunners and I can smell the birds are over there. Why would I run the whole field when I know the birds are going to be in the, they think more. So the younger you can train them to think, only do what you tell them to do and be more...
a little more directed instead
exactly,
of self-directed.
Exactly. So the younger you can train them, the better.
Right,
you know, definitely.
Right. Excellent. And the rewards, not financial, emotional, what have you. Is it worth trying to do this? I mean, you're talking to all these people with English setters.
You know, it depends on how driven you are. You're going to put in 6-8 years to get it done. It's going to take a long time. So if you've got it in you and the stamina and say, I'm going to do this, then go for it. It's an awesome feat. It's an amazing feat. You know, you figure the English Setter breed was the first breed inducted into the AKC stud book. So we're the oldest breed in America. And yet we have 13 dual champions. It's not an easy task. You really have to be dedicated to go for it.
All right. Well, congratulations to you. Congratulations to Frank. And good luck to everybody coming forward. Hopefully
yeah.
they can make this a renewal of the dual champion. You're going to be out there trialing dogs. You can do it.
Yeah, I think the thing that I would say to people is, you know, any way you can, educate people what the English Setter was look like when it came from England, what it was supposed to look like when it came from England, and teach judges that. And then I think that it's not that our breed doesn't have the ability to duel. Mm-hmm. It's that they need to be judged on the standard that they were brought from England to look like. And then they absolutely should be just as good of a hunting dog as a Brittany and a short hair. And I'm not saying that. I want a judge to judge my dog every bit as hard as any mm-hmm. of them. But we need to be judged by our standard.
It's interesting. I've mentioned this before in other podcasts. The Spaniel Hunt Test Program intentionally developed a written hunting standard for each breed in the hunt test program, because many of the judges that came to the Spaniel hunt test program came from Springers. A Clumber Spaniel or a Sussex Spaniel doesn't hunt the way a Springer does, and they ran into the same problem. They were getting banged for not being this hard flush and all of the rest of it. And I've often thought that pointing breeds could use a similar kind of, if nothing else, instruction manual, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I do think that the Llewellyn breed and the show breed has really become two different breeds.
Right.
And so,
right. The Llewellyn Laverick thing, Frank and I talked some about
right.
that, and I had one when I was a kid that was a cross. It was a Llewellyn Laverick mm-hmm. cross, and he was the coolest dog in the world.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
They're great dogs. We've owned several Llewellyns way back 20-some mm-hmm. years ago and field mm-hmm. trialed and finished their field trial championships. Mm-hmm. And they're much easier to finish their field trial championship
right.
because there's no prejudice against
right.
them. So.
They got that tie tail. And yeah. I think they tend to be a little snappier on the ground, don't you?
They look different on the ground mm-hmm. because they tend to gallop.
Right.
Our dogs tend to often trot or lope,
mm-hmm.
but the endurance of our dogs, they'll go for 8 hours. And
right.
the Llewellyns that we had, they would break down after an hour, hour and a half, but our dogs would keep going for 8 hours because we hunt all day. We don't
mm-hmm.
stop. And so that's what we really found with our dogs. And we had both.
Mm-hmm.
And we had short hairs too. So
mm-hmm.
we've hunted a lot of breeds and pointers. My husband's won the amateur pointer national twice, so his
awesome.
Dog has. So we've experienced all of that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Certainly want to encourage people to try.
Yeah. I think it's good. Anything that we can do to encourage the purebred dog community to support
yeah.
what these dogs were designed to do.
Well, I personally, this is my own vindictive, I believe that a sporting dog should have to get a hunting title before they can finish a show championship, and a herding dog should get a herding title. That's just my feeling.
Hounds, I mean, dogs right. that were, you know, in England, all of the sporting breeds, they can't be what we would call a dual championship, they call a full championship. And if they only have a show title, they're labeled right. show champion, not champion.
Right.
And I completely agree with that. Yeah. Huge advocate.
Yeah, me too.
Excellent.
Form to function.
Yeah, yeah. And preservation. I mean, if we're going to preserve our breeds, the function is part of the preservation piece.
Well, it's really important because if you don't have a balanced dog, if they're a hunting dog or if they're a herding dog, they should be able to herd all day, not just in half an hour. If they're a hunting dog, they should be able to hunt all day, day after day after day. They should be built properly. That's the form that goes with the function. If we're out there judging and we're putting up dogs that aren't balanced, it just does nothing for our breed, nothing, no justice for any of these breeds.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.